horses to be brought up, and the bodies tied across the saddles so that they might be packed in to La Granja. "Take that one, too," he said, "the one with his hands on the automatic rifle. That should be Sordo. He is the oldest, and it was he with the gun. No, cut the head off and wrap it in a poncho." He considered a minute. "You might as well take all the heads, and of the others below on the slope and where we first found them. Collect the rifles and pistols, and pack that gun on a horse." Then he walked down to where the lieutenant lay who had been killed in the first assault. He looked down at him, but did not touch him. "Qué cosa más mala es la guerra," he said to himself, which meant, "What a bad thing war is." Then he made the sign of the cross again, and as he walked down the hill he said 5 Our Fathers and 5 Hail Marys for the repose of the soul of his dead comrade. He did not wish to stay to see his orders being carried out. Chapter 28. After the planes went away, Robert Jordan and Primitivo heard the firing start, and his heart seemed to start again with it. A cloud of smoke drifted over the last ridge that he could see in the high country, and the planes were 3 steadily receding specks in the sky. "They've probably bombed hell out of their own cavalry and never touched Sordo and company," Robert Jordan said to himself. "The damned planes scare you to death, but they don't kill you." "The combat goes on," Primitivo said, listening to the heavy firing. He had winced at each bomb thud, and now he licked his dry lips. "Why not?" Robert Jordan said. "Those things never kill anybody." Then the firing stopped absolutely, and he did not hear another shot. Lieutenant Berendo's pistol shot did not carry that far. When the firing first stopped, it did not affect him. Then, as the quiet kept on, a hollow feeling came in his chest. Then he heard the grenades burst, and for a moment his heart rose. Then everything was quiet again, and the quiet kept on, and he knew that it was over. Maria came up from the camp with a tin bucket of stewed hare with mushrooms sunken in the rich gravy, and a sack with bread, a leather wine bottle, 4 tin plates, 2 cups, and 4 spoons. She stopped at the gun and ladled out 2 plates for Augustine and Eladio, who had replaced Anselmo at the gun, and gave them bread and unscrewed the horn tip of the wine bottle and poured 2 cups of wine. Robert Jordan watched her climbing lithely up to his lookout post, the sack over her shoulder, the bucket in one hand, her cropped head bright in the sun. He climbed down and took the bucket and helped her up the last boulder. "What did the aviation do?" she asked, her eyes frightened. "Bombed Sordo." He had the bucket open and was ladling out stew onto a plate.
"Are they still fighting?"
"No, it is over."
"Oh,"
she said, and bit her lip and looked out across the country.
"I have no appetite," Primitivo said.
"Eat anyway," Robert Jordan told him.
"I could not swallow food."
"Take a drink of this, man," Robert Jordan said, and handed him the wine bottle. "Then eat."
"This Sordo has taken away desire," Primitivo said.
"Eat thou, I have no desire." Maria went over to him and put her arms around his neck and kissed him.
"Eat, old one," she said. "Each one should take care of his strength."
Primitivo turned away from her. He took the wine bottle and, tipping his head back, swallowed steadily while he squirted a jet of wine into the back of his mouth. Then he filled his plate from the bucket and commenced to eat. Robert Jordan looked at Maria and shook his head. She sat down by him and put her arm around his shoulder. Each knew how the other felt, and they sat there and Robert Jordan ate the stew, taking time to appreciate the mushrooms completely, and he drank the wine, and they said nothing. "You may stay here, Guapa, if you want," he said after a while, when the food was all eaten.
"Nay," she said, "I must go to Pilar."
"It is all right to stay here. I do not think that anything will happen now."
"Nay, I must go to Pilar. She has given me instruction."
"What does she give thee?"
"Instruction."
She smiled at him and then kissed him.
"Did you never hear of religious instruction?"
She blushed.
"It is something like that."
She blushed again.
"But different."
"Go to thy instruction," he said, and patted her on the head. She smiled at him again, then said to Primitivo,
"Do you want anything from below?"
"No, daughter," he said. They both saw that he was still not yet recovered.
"Salud, old one,"
she said to him.
Listen, Primitivo said. I have no fear to die, but to leave them alone thus. His voice broke. There was no choice, Robert Jordan told him. I know. But all the same, there was no choice, Robert Jordan repeated. And now it is better not to speak of it. Yes, but there alone, with no aid from us. Much better not to speak of it, Robert Jordan said. And thou, Guapa, get thee to thy instruction. He watched her climb down through the rocks. Then he sat there for a long time thinking and watching the high country. Primitivo spoke to him, but he did not answer. It was hot in the sun, but he did not notice the heat while he sat watching the hill slopes and the long patches of pine trees that stretched up the highest slope. An hour passed, and the sun was far to his left now when he saw them coming over the crest of the slope, and he picked up his glasses. The horses showed small and minute as the first two riders came into sight on the long green slope of the high hill. Then there were four more horsemen coming down, spread out across the wide hill, and then through his glasses he saw the double column of men and horses ride into the sharp clarity of his vision. As he watched them, he felt sweat come from his armpits and run down his flanks. One man rode at the head of the column, then came more horsemen. Then came the riderless horses with their burdens tied across the saddles. Then there were two riders. Then came the wounded with men walking by them as they rode. Then came more cavalry to close the column. Robert Jordan watched them ride down the slope and out of sight into the timber. He could not see at that distance the load one saddle bore of a long rolled poncho tied at each end and at intervals so that it bulged between each lashing, as a pod bulges with peas. This was tied across the saddle, and at each end it was lashed to the stirrup leathers. Alongside this, on the top of the saddle, the automatic rifle Sordo had served was lashed arrogantly. Lieutenant Berendo, who was riding at the head of the column, his flankers out, his point pushed well forward, felt no arrogance. He felt only the hollowness that comes after action. He was thinking, taking the heads is barbarous, but proof and identification is necessary. I will have trouble enough about this as it is, and who knows, this of the heads may appeal to them. There are those of them who like such things. It is possible they will send them all to Burgos. It is a barbarous business. The plains were muchos, much, much. But we could have done it all, and almost without losses, with a Stokes mortar. Two mules to carry the shells and a mule with a mortar on each side of the pack saddle. What an army we would be then. With the firepower of all these automatic weapons and another mule? No, two mules to carry ammunition. Leave it alone, he told himself. It is no longer cavalry. Leave it alone. You're building yourself an army. Next you will want a mountain gun. Then he thought of Julian, dead on the hill, dead now. Tied across a horse there in the first troop, and as he rode down into the dark pine forest, leaving the sunlight behind him on the hill, riding now in the quiet dark of the forest, he started to say a prayer for him again. Hail, Holy Queen, Mother of Mercy, he started. Our life, our sweetness, and our hope. To thee do we send up our sighs, mournings, and weepings in this valley of tears. He went on with the prayer, the horse's hooves soft on the fallen pine needles, the light coming through the tree trunks in patches as it comes through the columns of a cathedral. And as he prayed, he looked ahead to see his flankers riding through the trees. He rode out of the forest onto the yellow road that led into La Granja, and the horses' hooves raised a dust that hung over them as they rode. It powdered the dead who were tied face down across the saddles, and the wounded, and those who walked beside them were in thick dust. It was here that Anselmo saw them ride past in their dust. He counted the dead and the wounded, and he recognized Sordo's automatic rifle. He did not know what the poncho-wrapped bundle was which flapped against the led horse's flanks as the stirrup leathers swung. But when, on his way home, he came in the dark onto the hill where Sordo had fought, he knew at once what the long poncho roll contained. In the dark he could not tell who had been up on the hill, but he counted those that lay there, and then made off across the hills for Pablo's camp. Walking alone in the dark, with a fear like a freezing of his heart from the feeling the holes of the bomb craters had given him, from them and from what he had found on the hill, He put all thought of the next day out of his mind. He simply walked as fast as he could to bring the news. And as he walked, he prayed for the souls of Sordo and of all his band. It was the first time he had prayed since the start of the movement. "Most kind, most sweet, most clement virgin," he prayed. But he could not keep from thinking of the next day, finally. So he thought, "I will do exactly as the Inglés says, and as he says to do it. But let me be close to him, O Lord, and may his instructions be exact, for I do not think that I could control myself under the bombardment of the plains. Help me, O Lord, tomorrow to comport myself as a man should in his last hours. Help me, O Lord, to understand clearly the needs of the day. Help me, O Lord, to dominate the movement of my legs that I should not run when the bad moment comes. Help me, O Lord, to comport myself as a man tomorrow in the day of battle. Since I have asked this aid of thee, please grant it, knowing I would not ask it if it were not serious, and I will ask nothing more of thee again." Walking in the dark alone, he felt much better from having prayed, and he was sure now that he would comport himself well. Walking now down from the high country, he went back to praying for the people of Sordo, and in a short time he had reached the upper post, where Fernando challenged him. "It is I," he answered, "Anselmo."
"Good," Fernando said.
"You know of this of Sordo, old one?" Anselmo asked Fernando, the two of them standing at the entrance of the big rocks in the dark.
"Why not?" Fernando said. "Pablo has told us."
"He was up there?"
"Why not?" Fernando said stolidly. "He visited the hill as soon as the cavalry left."
"He told you?"
"He told us all," Fernando said. "What barbarians these fascists are. We must do away with all such barbarians in Spain."
He stopped, then said bitterly,
"In them is lacking all conception of dignity."
Anselmo grinned in the dark. An hour ago he could not have imagined that he would ever smile again. "What a marvel, that Fernando," he thought.
"Yes," he said to Fernando, "we must teach them. We must take away their planes, their automatic weapons, their tanks, their artillery, and teach them dignity."
"Exactly," Fernando said. "I am glad that you agree." Anselmo left him standing there alone with his dignity, and went on down to the cave. Chapter 29 Anselmo found Robert Jordan sitting at the plank table inside the cave with Pablo opposite him. They had a bowl poured full of wine between them, and each had a cup of wine on the table. Robert Jordan had his notebook out, and he was holding a pencil. Pilar and Maria were in the back of the cave, out of sight. There was no way for Anselmo to know that the woman was keeping the girl back there to keep her from hearing the conversation, and he thought that it was odd that Pilar was not at the table. Robert Jordan looked up as Anselmo came in under the blanket that hung over the opening. Pablo stared straight at the table. His eyes were focused on the wine bowl, but he was not seeing it.
"I come from above," Anselmo said to Robert Jordan.
"Pablo has told us," Robert Jordan said.
"There were 6 dead on the hill, and they had taken the heads," Anselmo said. "I was there in the dark."
Robert Jordan nodded. Pablo sat there looking at the wine bowl and saying nothing. There was no expression on his face, and his small pig eyes were looking at the wine bowl as though he had never seen one before. "Sit down," Robert Jordan said to Anselmo. The old man sat down at the table on one of the hide-covered stools, and Robert Jordan reached under the table and brought up the pinch bottle of whiskey that had been the gift of Sordo. It was about half full. Robert Jordan reached down the table for a cup and poured a drink of whiskey into it and shoved it along the table to Anselmo. "Drink that, old one," he said. Pablo looked from the wine bowl to Anselmo's face as he drank, and then he looked back at the wine bowl. As Anselmo swallowed the whiskey, he felt a burning in his nose, his eyes, and his mouth, and then a happy, comforting warmth in his stomach. He wiped his mouth with the back of his hand. Then he looked at Robert Jordan and said,
"Can I have another?"
"Why not?" Robert Jordan said, and poured another drink from the bottle, and handed it this time, instead of pushing it. This time there was not the burning when he swallowed, but the warm comfort doubled. It was as good a thing for his spirit as a saline injection is for a man who has suffered a great hemorrhage. The old man looked toward the bottle again. "The rest is for tomorrow," Robert Jordan said. "What passed on the road, old one?" There was much movement, Anselmo said. I have it all noted down as you showed me. I have one watching for me and noting now. Later I will go for her report.
Did you see anti-tank guns? Those on rubber tires with the long barrels?
Yes, Anselmo said. There were 4 camions which passed on the road. In each of them, there was such a gun, with pine branches spread across the barrels. In the trucks rode 6 men with each gun.
4 guns, you say? Robert Jordan asked him.
4, Anselmo said. He did not look at his papers.
Tell me what else went up the road.
While Robert Jordan noted, Anselmo told him everything he had seen move past him on the road. He told it from the beginning, and in order, with the wonderful memory of those who cannot read or write, and twice while he was talking, Pablo reached out for more wine from the bowl.
There was also the cavalry which entered La Granja from the high country where El Sordo fought, Anselmo went on.
Then he told the number of the wounded he had seen, and the number of the dead across the saddles.
There was a bundle packed across one saddle that I did not understand, he said, but now I know it was the heads.
He went on without pausing.
It was a squadron of cavalry. They had only one officer left. He was not the one who was here in the early morning when you were by the gun. He must have been one of the dead. 2 of the dead were officers by their sleeves. They were lashed face down over the saddles, their arms hanging. Also they had the máquina of El Sordo tied to the saddle that bore the heads. The barrel was bent.
That is all, he finished.
It is enough, Robert Jordan said, and dipped his cup into the wine bowl. Who beside you has been through the lines to the side of the Republic?
Andrés and Eladio.
Which is the better of those 2?
Andrés.
How long would it take him to get to Navacerrada from here?
Carrying no pack and taking his precautions, in 3 hours with luck. We came by a longer, safer route because of the material.
He can surely make it?
No sé. There is no such thing as surely.
Not for thee, either?
Nay.
That decides that, Robert Jordan thought to himself. If he had said that he could make it surely, surely I would have sent him.
Andrés can get there as well as thee?
As well or better, he is younger.
But this must absolutely get there.
If nothing happens, he will get there. If anything happens, it could happen to anyone.
I will write a dispatch and send it by him, Robert Jordan said. I will explain to him where he can find the general. He will be at the Estado Mayor of the division.
He will not understand all this of divisions and all, Anselmo said. Always has it confused me. He should have the name of the general and where he can be found.
But it is at the Estado Mayor of the division that he will be found.
But is that not a place?
Certainly it is a place, old one, Robert Jordan explained patiently. But it is a place the general will have selected. It is where he will make his headquarters for the battle.
Where is it, then?
Anselmo was tired, and the tiredness was making him stupid. Also words like brigades, divisions, army corps confused him. First there had been columns, then there were regiments, then there were brigades. Now there were brigades and divisions both. He did not understand. A place was a place.
Take it slowly, old one, Robert Jordan said.
He knew that if he could not make Anselmo understand, he could never explain it clearly to Andrés either.
The Estado Mayor of the division is a place the general will have picked to set up his organization to command. He commands a division, which is 2 brigades. I do not know where it is because I was not there when it was picked. It will probably be a cave or dugout, a refuge, and wires will run to it. Andrés must ask for the general and for the Estado Mayor of the division. He must give this to the general or to the chief of his Estado Mayor or to another whose name I will write. One of them will surely be there, even if the others are out inspecting the preparations for the attack. Do you understand now?
Yes.
Then get Andrés, and I will write it now and seal it with this seal.
He showed him the small, round, wooden-backed rubber stamp with the seal of the SIM and the round, tin-covered inking pad, no bigger than a 50-cent piece he carried in his pocket.
That seal they will honor. Get Andrés now, and I will explain to him.
He must go quickly. But first he must understand.
He will understand if I do, but you must make it very clear. This of staffs and divisions is a mystery to me. Always have I gone to such things as definite places such as a house. In Navacerrada, it is in the old hotel where the place of command is. In Guadarrama, it is in a house with a garden.
With this general, Robert Jordan said. It will be someplace very close to the lines. It will be underground to protect from the planes. Andres will find it easily by asking, if he knows what to ask for. He will only need to show what I have written. But fetch him now, for this should get there quickly. Anselmo went out, ducking under the hanging blanket. Robert Jordan commenced writing in his notebook.
Listen, Inglés,
Pablo said, still looking at the wine bowl. I am writing, Robert Jordan said, without looking up.
Listen, Inglés,
Pablo spoke directly to the wine bowl.
There is no need to be disheartened in this. Without Sordo, we have plenty of people to take the posts and blow thy bridge.
Good, Robert Jordan said, without stopping writing.
Plenty, Pablo said. I have admired thy judgment much today, Inglés,
Pablo told the wine bowl.
I think thou hast much picardia, that thou art smarter than I am. I have confidence in thee.
Concentrating on his report to Goltz, trying to put it in the fewest words and still make it absolutely convincing, trying to put it so the attack would be cancelled, absolutely, yet convince them he wasn't trying to have it called off because of any fears he might have about the danger of his own mission, but wished only to put them in possession of all the facts, Robert Jordan was hardly half listening.
Inglés, Pablo said.
I am writing, Robert Jordan told him, without looking up. I probably should send 2 copies, he thought. But if I do, we will not have enough people to blow it if I have to blow it. What do I know about why this attack is made? Maybe it is only a holding attack. Maybe they want to draw those troops from somewhere else. Perhaps they make it to draw those planes from the north. Maybe that is what it is about. Perhaps it is not expected to succeed. What do I know about it? This is my report to Goltz. I do not blow the bridge until the attack starts. My orders are clear, and if the attack is called off, I blow nothing. But I've got to keep enough people here for the bare minimum necessary to carry the orders out. What did you say? He asked Pablo.
That I have confidence, Inglés.
Pablo was still addressing the wine bowl. Man, I wish I had, Robert Jordan thought. He went on writing. Chapter 30. So now everything had been done that there was to do that night. All orders had been given. Everyone knew exactly what he was to do in the morning. Andres had been gone 3 hours. Either it would come now with the coming of the daylight, or it would not come. I believe that it will come, Robert Jordan told himself, walking back down from the upper post where he had gone to speak to Primitivo. Goltz makes the attack, but he has not the power to cancel it. Permission to cancel it will have to come from Madrid. The chances are they won't be able to wake anybody up there, and if they do wake up, they will be too sleepy to think. I should have gotten word to Goltz sooner of the preparations they have made to meet the attack, but how could I send word about something until it happened? They did not move up that stuff until just at dark. They did not want to have any movement on the road spotted by planes. But what about all their planes? What about those fascist planes? Surely our people must have been warned by them. But perhaps the fascists were faking for another offensive down through Guadalajara with them. There were supposed to be Italian troops concentrated in Soria, and at Sigüenza again, besides those operating in the north. They haven't enough troops or material to run 2 major offensives at the same time, though. That is impossible. So it must be just a bluff. But we know how many troops the Italians have landed all last month, and the month before at Cadiz. It is always possible they will try again at Guadalajara, not stupidly as before, but with 3 main fingers coming down to broaden it out and carry it along the railway to the west of the plateau. There was a way that they could do it all right. Hans had shown him. They made many mistakes the first time. The whole conception was unsound. They had not used any of the same troops in the Arganda offensive against the Madrid-Valencia road that they used at Guadalajara. Why had they not made those same drives simultaneously? Why? Why? When would we know why? Yet we had stopped them both times with the very same troops. We never could have stopped them if they had pulled both drives at once. Don't worry, he told himself. Look at the miracles that have happened before this. Either you will have to blow that bridge in the morning or you will not have to. But do not start deceiving yourself into thinking you won't have to blow it. You will blow it one day or you will blow it another. or if it is not this bridge, it will be some other bridge. It is not you who decides what shall be done. You follow orders. Follow them, and do not try to think beyond them. The orders on this are very clear, too very clear. But you must not worry, nor must you be frightened. For if you allow yourself the luxury of normal fear, that fear will infect those who must work with you. But that heads business was quite a thing all the same, he told himself. And the old man running onto them on the hilltop alone? How would you have liked to run onto them like that? That impressed you, didn't it? Yes, that impressed you, Jordan. You have been quite impressed more than once today. But you have behaved okay. So far, you have behaved all right. You do very well for an instructor in Spanish at the University of Montana, he joked at himself. You do all right for that. But do not start to thinking that you are anything very special. You haven't gotten very far in this business. Just remember Duran, who never had any military training, and who was a composer and lad about town before the movement, and is now a damned good general commanding a brigade. It was all as simple and easy to learn and understand to Duran as chess to a child chess prodigy. You had read on and studied the art of war ever since you were a boy, and your grandfather had started you on the American Civil War. Except that grandfather always called it the War of the Rebellion. But compared with Duran, you were like a good, sound chess player against a boy prodigy. Old Duran. It would be good to see Duran again. He would see him at Gaylord's after this was over. Yes, after this was over. See how well he was behaving? I'll see him at Gaylord's, he said to himself, after this is over. Don't kid yourself, he said. You do it all perfectly okay, cold, without kidding yourself. You aren't going to see Duran anymore, and it is of no importance. Don't be that way either, he told himself. Don't go in for any of those luxuries. Nor for heroic resignation either. We do not want any citizens full of heroic resignation in these hills. Your grandfather fought 4 years in our Civil War, and you are just finishing your first year in this war. You have a long time to go yet, and you are very well fitted for the work. And now you have Maria, too. Why, you've got everything. You shouldn't worry. What is a little brush between a guerrilla band and a squadron of cavalry? That isn't anything. What if they took their heads? Does that make any difference? None at all. The Indians always took the scalps when Grandfather was at Fort Kearney after the war. Do you remember the cabinet in your father's office with the arrowheads spread out on a shelf, and the eagle feathers of the war bonnets that hung on the wall, their plumes slanting, the smoked buckskin smell of the leggings and the shirts and the feel of the beaded moccasins? Do you remember the great stave of the buffalo bow that leaned in a corner of the cabinet and the two quivers of hunting and war arrows and how the bundle of shafts felt when you closed your hand around them? Remember something like that. Remember something concrete and practical. Remember Grandfather's saber, bright and well-oiled in its dented scabbard, and Grandfather showed you how the blade had been thinned from the many times it had been to the grinders. Remember Grandfather's Smith & Wesson. It was a single-action, officer's model .32 caliber, and there was no trigger guard. It had the softest, sweetest trigger pull you had ever felt, and it was always well-oiled, and the bore was clean, although the finish was all worn off, and the brown metal of the barrel and the cylinder was worn smooth from the leather of the holster. It was kept in the holster with a U.S. on the flap, in a drawer in the cabinet with its cleaning equipment and 200 rounds of cartridges. Their cardboard boxes were wrapped and tied neatly with waxed twine. You could take the pistol out of the drawer and hold it. Handle it freely, was Grandfather's expression, but you could not play with it because it was a serious weapon. You asked Grandfather once if he had ever killed anyone with it, and he said, yes. Then you said, when, Grandfather? And he said, in the War of the Rebellion, and afterwards. You said, will you tell me about it, Grandfather? And he said, I do not care to speak about it, Robert. Then after your father had shot himself with this pistol, and you had come home from school and they'd had the funeral, the coroner had returned it after the inquest, saying, Bob, I guess you might want to keep the gun. I'm supposed to hold it, but I know your dad set a lot of store by it because his dad packed it all through the war, besides out here when he first came out with the cavalry.
and it's still a hell of a good gun. I had her out trying her this afternoon. She don't throw much of a slug, but you can hit things with her.
He had put the gun back in the drawer in the cabinet where it belonged, but the next day he took it out and he had ridden up to the top of the high country above Red Lodge with Chubb, where they had built the road to Cook City now over the pass and across the Bear Tooth Plateau, and up there where the wind was thin and there was snow all summer on the hills, they had stopped by the lake which was supposed to be 800 feet deep and was a deep green color, and Chubb held the two horses, and he climbed out on a rock and leaned over and saw his face in the still water, and saw himself holding the gun, and then he dropped it, holding it by the muzzle, and saw it go down, making bubbles until it was just as big as a watch charm in that clear water, and then it was out of sight. Then he came back off the rock, and when he swung up into the saddle, he gave old Bess such a clout with the spurs, she started to buck like an old rocking horse. He bucked her out along the shore of the lake, and as soon as she was reasonable, they went on back along the trail.
"I know why you did that with the old gun, Bob," Chubb said.
"Well, then we don't have to talk about it," he had said. They never talked about it, and that was the end of Grandfather's sidearms, except for the saber. He still had the saber in his trunk with the rest of his things at Missoula. "I wonder what Grandfather would think of this situation," he thought. Grandfather was a hell of a good soldier, everybody said. They said if he had been with Custer that day, he never would have let him be sucked in that way. How could he ever not have seen the smoke nor the dust of all those lodges down there in the draw along the Little Bighorn, unless there must have been a heavy morning mist? But there wasn't any mist. "I wish Grandfather were here instead of me. Well, maybe we will all be together by tomorrow night. If there should be any such damn fool business as a hereafter, and I'm sure there isn't," he thought, "I would certainly like to talk to him, because there are a lot of things I would like to know. I have a right to ask him now, because I have had to do the same sort of things myself. I don't think he'd mind my asking now. I had no right to ask before. I understand him not telling me because he didn't know me. But now I think that we would get along all right. I'd like to be able to talk to him now and get his advice. Hell, if I didn't get advice, I'd just like to talk to him. It's a shame there is such a jump in time between ones like us." Then, as he thought, he realized that if there was any such thing as ever meeting, both he and his grandfather would be acutely embarrassed by the presence of his father. "Anyone has a right to do it," he thought, "but it isn't a good thing to do. I understand it, but I do not approve of it." "Lash" was the word. "But you do understand it?" "Sure, I understand it, but..." "Yes, but. You have to be awfully occupied with yourself to do a thing like that." Oh, hell, I wish Grandfather was here, he thought, for about an hour anyway. Maybe he sent me what little I have through that other one that misused the gun. Maybe that is the only communication that we have. But damn it, truly damn it. But I wish the time lag wasn't so long, so that I could have learned from him what the other one never had to teach me. But suppose the fear he had to go through and dominate and just get rid of finally in 4 years of that, and then in the Indian fighting, although in that mostly there couldn't have been so much fear, had made a cobarde out of the other one the way second-generation bullfighters almost always are. Suppose that. And maybe the good juice only came through straight again, after passing through that one. I'll never forget how sick it made me the first time I knew he was a cobarde. Go on, say it in English. Coward. It's easier when you have it said, and there is never any point in referring to a son of a bitch by some foreign term. He wasn't any son of a bitch, though. He was just a coward, and that was the worst luck any man could have. Because if he wasn't a coward, he would have stood up to that woman, and not let her bully him. I wonder what I would have been like if he had married a different woman. That's something you'll never know, he thought, and grinned. Maybe the bully in her helped to supply what was missing in the other. And you... take it a little easy. Don't get to referring to the good juice and such other things until you are through tomorrow. Don't be snotty too soon. And then don't be snotty at all. We'll see what sort of juice you have tomorrow. But he started thinking about Grandfather again. George Custer was not an intelligent leader of cavalry, Robert, his grandfather had said. He was not even an intelligent man.
He remembered that when his grandfather said that, he felt resentment that anyone should speak against that figure in the buckskin shirt, the yellow curls blowing, that stood on that hill, holding a service revolver, as the Sioux closed in around him in the old Anheuser-Busch lithograph that hung on the pool room wall in Red Lodge.
"He just had a great ability to get himself in and out of trouble," his grandfather went on. "And on the Little Bighorn, he got into it, but he couldn't get out. Now, Phil Sheridan was an intelligent man, and so was Jeb Stuart. But John Mosby was the finest cavalry leader that ever lived."
He had a letter in his things in the trunk at Missoula, from General Phil Sheridan to old Killy the Horse Kilpatrick, that said his grandfather was a finer leader of irregular cavalry than John Mosby. "I ought to tell Goltz about my grandfather," he thought. "He wouldn't ever have heard of him, though. He probably never even heard of John Mosby." The British all had heard of them, though, because they had to study our Civil War much more than people did on the continent. Kharkov said after this was over, I could go to the Lenin Institute in Moscow if I wanted to. He said I could go to the Military Academy of the Red Army if I wanted to do that. I wonder what Grandfather would think of that. Grandfather, who never knowingly sat at table with a Democrat in his life. Well, I don't want to be a soldier, he thought. I know that, so that's out. I just want us to win this war. I guess really good soldiers are really good at very little else, he thought. That's obviously untrue. Look at Napoleon and Wellington. You're very stupid this evening, he thought. Usually his mind was very good company, and tonight it had been when he thought about his grandfather. Then thinking of his father had thrown him off. He understood his father, and he forgave him everything, and he pitied him, but he was ashamed of him. You better not think at all, he told himself. Soon you will be with Maria, and you won't have to think. That's the best way, now that everything has worked out. When you have been concentrating so hard on something you can't stop, and your brain gets to racing like a flywheel with the weight gone, you better just not think. But just suppose, he thought, just suppose that when the planes unload, they smash those anti-tank guns, and just blow hell out of the positions, and the old tanks roll good up whatever hill it is for once, and old Goltz boots that bunch of drunks, clochards, bums, fanatics, and heroes that make up the 14th Brigade ahead of him. And I know how good Durand's people are in Goltz's other brigade, and we are in Segovia tomorrow night. Yes. Just suppose, he said to himself. I'll settle for La Granja, he told himself. But you are going to have to blow that bridge, he suddenly knew absolutely. There won't be any calling off. Because the way you have just been supposing there for a minute is how the possibilities of that attack look to those who have ordered it. Yes, you will have to blow the bridge, he knew truly. Whatever happens to Andres doesn't matter. Coming down the trail there in the dark, alone with the good feeling that everything that had to be done was over for the next 4 hours, and with the confidence that had come from thinking back to concrete things, the knowledge that he would surely have to blow the bridge came to him almost with comfort. The uncertainty, the enlargement of the feeling of being uncertain, as when, through a misunderstanding of possible dates, one does not know whether the guests are really coming to a party, that had been with him ever since he had dispatched Andres with the report to Goltz, had all dropped from him now. He was sure now that the festival would not be canceled. It's much better to be sure, he thought. It's always much better to be sure. Chapter 31. So now they were in the robe again together, and it was late in the last night. Maria lay close against him, and he felt the long smoothness of her thighs against his, and her breasts like two small hills that rise out of the long plain where there is a well, and the far country beyond the hills was the valley of her throat, where his lips were. He lay very quiet and did not think, and she stroked his head with her hand.
"Roberto,"
Maria said very softly, and kissed him.
"I am ashamed. I do not wish to disappoint thee, but there is a great soreness and much pain. I do not think I would be any good to thee."
"There is always a great soreness and much pain," he said. "Nay, rabbit, that is nothing. We will do nothing that makes pain."
"It is not that. It is that I am not good to receive thee as I wish to."
"That is of no importance. That is a passing thing. We are together when we lie together."
Yes, but I am ashamed. I think it was from when things were done to me that it comes, not from thee and me.
Let us not talk of that.
Nor do I wish to. I meant I could not bear to fail thee now on this night, and so I sought to excuse myself.
Listen, Rabbit, he said. All such things pass, and then there is no problem. But he thought it was not good luck for the last night. Then he was ashamed and said, Lie close against me, Rabbit. I love thee as much feeling thee against me in here in the dark as I love thee making love.
I am deeply ashamed because I thought it might be again tonight as it was in the high country when we came down from El Sordos.
Que va, he said to her, that is not for every day. I like it thus as well as the other. He lied, putting aside disappointment. We will be here together quietly, and we will sleep. Let us talk together. I know thee very little from talking.
Should we speak of tomorrow and of thy work? I would like to be intelligent about thy work.
No, he said, and relaxed completely into the length of the robe, and lay now quietly with his cheek against her shoulder, his left arm under her head. The most intelligent is not to talk about tomorrow, nor what happened today. In this we do not discuss the losses, and what we must do tomorrow we will do. Thou art not afraid?
Que va, she said. I am always afraid. But now I am afraid for thee so much I do not think of me.
Thou must not, Rabbit. I have been in many things, and worse than this, he lied. Then suddenly surrendering to something, to the luxury of going into unreality, he said, Let us talk of Madrid, and of us in Madrid.
Good,
she said. Then,
O Roberto, I am sorry I have failed thee. Is there not some other thing that I can do for thee?
He stroked her head and kissed her, and then lay close and relaxed beside her, listening to the quiet of the night. Thou canst talk with me of Madrid, he said, and thought, I'll keep any oversupply of that for tomorrow. I'll need all of that there is tomorrow. There are no pine needles that need that now as I will need it tomorrow. Who was it cast his seed upon the ground in the Bible? Onan? How did Onan turn out, he thought. I don't remember ever hearing any more about Onan. He smiled in the dark. Then he surrendered again and let himself slip into it, feeling a voluptuousness of surrender into unreality that was like a sexual acceptance of something that could come in the night when there was no understanding, only the delight of acceptance. My beloved, he said, and kissed her. Listen, the other night I was thinking about Madrid, and I thought how I would get there and leave thee at the hotel while I went up to see people at the Hotel of the Russians. But that was false. I would not leave thee at any hotel.
Why not?
Because I will take care of thee. I will not ever leave thee. I will go with thee to the Seguridad to get papers. Then I will go with thee to buy those clothes that are needed.
They are few, and I can buy them.
Nay, they are many, and we will go together and buy good ones, and thou wilt be beautiful in them.
I would rather we stayed in the room in the hotel and sent out for the clothes. Where is the hotel?
It is on the Plaza del Callao. We will be much in that room in that hotel. There is a wide bed with clean sheets, and there is hot running water in the bathtub, and there are two closets, and I will keep my things in one, and thou wilt take the other. And there are tall, wide windows that open, and outside in the streets there is the spring. Also, I know good places to eat that are illegal but with good food, and I know shops where there is still wine and whiskey. And we will keep things to eat in the room for when we are hungry, and also whiskey for when I wish a drink, and I will buy thee manzanilla.
I would like to try the whiskey.
But since it is difficult to obtain, and if thou likest manzanilla...
Keep thy whiskey, Roberto, she said. Oh, I love thee very much.
Thou and thy whiskey that I could not have.
What a pig thou art.
Nay, you shall try it. But it is not good for a woman.
And I have only had things that were good for a woman, Maria said. Then there in bed I will still wear my wedding shirt?
Nay, I will buy thee various nightgowns, and pajamas too, if you should prefer them.
I will buy 7 wedding shirts, she said. One for each day of the week, and I will buy a clean wedding shirt for thee. Dost ever wash thy shirt?
Sometimes.
I will keep everything clean, and I will pour thy whiskey and put the water in it as it was done at Sordos. I will obtain olives and salted codfish and hazelnuts for thee to eat while thou drinkest, and we will stay in the room for a month and never leave it. If I am fit to receive thee, she said, suddenly unhappy.
That is nothing, Robert Jordan told her.
Truly, it is nothing. It is possible thou wert hurt there once, and now there is a scar that makes a further hurting. Such a thing is possible. All such things pass. And also there are good doctors in Madrid, if there is truly anything. But all was good before, she said pleadingly.
That is the promise that all will be good again.
Then let us talk again about Madrid.
She curled her legs between his and rubbed the top of her head against his shoulder.
But will I not be so ugly there with this cropped head that thou wilt be ashamed of me?
Nay, thou art lovely. Thou hast a lovely face and a beautiful body, long and light, and thy skin is smooth and the color of burnt gold, and everyone will try to take thee from me.
Que va, take me from thee, she said. No other man will ever touch me till I die. Take me from thee, que va.
But many will try. Thou wilt see.
They will see I love thee so, that they will know it would be as unsafe as putting their hands into a cauldron of melted lead to touch me. But thou, when thou seest beautiful women of the same culture as thee, thou wilt not be ashamed of me?
Never. And I will marry thee.
If you wish, she said. But since we no longer have the church, I do not think it carries importance.
I would like us to be married.
If you wish. But listen, if we were ever in another country where there still was the church, perhaps we could be married in it there.
In my country, they still have the church, he told her. There we can be married in it if it means aught to thee. I have never been married. There is no problem.
I am glad thou hast never been married, she said. But I am glad thou knowest about such things, as you have told me, for that means thou hast been with many women, and the Pilar told me that it is only such men who are possible for husbands. But thou wilt not run with other women now? Because it would kill me.
I have never run with many women, he said truly. Until thee I did not think that I could love one deeply. She stroked his cheeks, and then held her hands clasped behind his head.
Thou must have known very many.
Not to love them.
Listen, the Pilar told me something.
Say it.
No, it is better not to. Let us talk again about Madrid.
What was it you were going to say?
I do not wish to say it.
Perhaps it would be better to say it if it could be important.
You think it is important?
Yes.
But how can you know when you do not know what it is?
From thy manner.
I will not keep it from you, then. The Pilar told me that we would all die tomorrow, and that you know it as well as she does, and that you give it no importance. She said this not in criticism, but in admiration.
She said that? He said.
The crazy bitch, he thought.
And he said, that is more of her gypsy manure. That is the way old market women and cafe cowards talk. That is manuring obscenity. He felt the sweat that came from under his armpits and slid down between his arm and his side, and he said to himself, so you are scared, eh? And aloud he said, she is a manure-mouthed, superstitious bitch. Let us talk again of Madrid.
Then you know no such thing?
Of course not. Do not talk such manure, he said, using a stronger, ugly word. But this time when he talked about Madrid, there was no slipping into make-believe again. Now he was just lying to his girl and to himself to pass the night before battle, and he knew it. He liked to do it, but all the luxury of the acceptance was gone. But he started again. I have thought about thy hair, he said, and what we can do about it. You see, it grows now all over thy head the same length, like the fur of an animal, and it is lovely to feel, and I love it very much, and it is beautiful, and it flattens and rises like a wheat field in the wind when I pass my hand over it.
Pass thy hand over it?
He did, and left his hand there and went on talking to her throat, as he felt his own throat swell. But in Madrid I thought we could go together to the coiffures, and they could cut it neatly on the sides and in the back as they cut mine, and that way it would look better in the town while it was growing out.
I would look like thee, she said, and held him close to her. And then I never would want to change it.
Nay, it will grow all the time, and that will only be to keep it neat at the start while it is growing long. How long will it take to grow long?
Really long?
No, I mean to thy shoulders. It is thus I would have thee wear it.
As Garbo in the cinema?
Yes, he said thickly. Now the making-believe was coming back in a great rush, and he would take it all to him. It had him now, and again he surrendered and went on. So it will hang straight to thy shoulders, and curl at the ends, as a wave of the sea curls, and it will be the color of ripe wheat, and thy face the color of burnt gold, and thine eyes the only color they could be with thy hair and thy skin, gold with the dark flecks in them. And I will push thy head back, and look in thy eyes, and hold thee tight against me.
Where?
Anywhere. Wherever it is that we are. How long will it take for thy hair to grow?
I do not know, because it never had been cut before. But I think in 6 months it should be long enough to hang well below my ears, and in a year, as long as thou couldst ever wish. But do you know what will happen first?
Tell me.
We will be in the big clean bed in thy famous room, in our famous hotel, and we will sit in the famous bed together, and look into the mirror of the armoire, and there will be thee, and there will be me in the glass, and then I will turn to thee thus, and put my arms around thee thus, and then I will kiss thee thus.
Then they lay quiet and close together in the night, hot, aching, rigid, close together and holding her. Robert Jordan held closely to all those things that he knew could never happen, and he went on with it deliberately and said,
Rabbit, we will not always live in that hotel.
Why not? We can get an apartment in Madrid, on that street that runs along the Parque of the Buen Retiro. I know an American woman who furnished apartments and rented them before the movement, and I know how to get such an apartment for only the rent that was paid before the movement. There are apartments there that face on the park, and you can see all of the park from the windows, the iron fence, the gardens, and the gravel walks, and the green of the lawns where they touch the gravel, and the trees deep with shadows and the many fountains, and now the chestnut trees will be in bloom. In Madrid we can walk in the park and row on the lake if the water is back in it now.
Why would the water be out?
They drained it in November because it made a mark to sight from when the planes came over for bombing. But I think that the water is back in it now. I'm not sure. But even if there is no water in it, we can walk through all the park away from the lake, and there is a part that is like a forest with trees from all parts of the world with their names on them, with placards that tell what trees they are and where they came from.
I would almost as soon go to the cinema, Maria said, but the trees sound very interesting, and I will learn them all with thee if I can remember them.
They are not as in a museum, Robert Jordan said. They grow naturally, and there are hills in the park, and part of the park is like a jungle. Then below it there is the book fair, where along the sidewalks there are hundreds of booths with second-hand books in them, and now since the movement there are many books, stolen in the looting of the houses which have been bombed, and from the houses of the fascists, and brought to the book fair by those who stole them. I could spend all day every day at the stalls of the book fair, as I once did in the days before the movement, if I ever could have any time in Madrid.
While thou art visiting the book fair, I will occupy myself with the apartment, Maria said. We will have enough money for a servant?
Surely. I can get Petra, who is at the hotel, if she pleases thee. She cooks well and is clean. I have eaten there with newspaper men that she cooks for. They have electric stoves in their rooms.
If you wish her, Maria said, or I can find someone. But wilt thou not be away much with thy work?
They would not let me go with thee on such work as this. Perhaps I can get work in Madrid. I have done this work now for a long time, and I have fought since the start of the movement. It is possible that they would give me work now in Madrid. I have never asked for it. I have always been at the front or in such work as this. Do you know that until I met thee, I have never asked for anything, nor wanted anything, nor thought of anything except the movement and the winning of this war? Truly, I have been very pure in my ambitions. I have worked much, and now I love thee. And he said it now in a complete embracing of all that would not be. I love thee as I love all that we have fought for. I love thee as I love liberty and dignity and the rights of all men to work and not be hungry. I love thee as I love Madrid that we have defended, and as I love all my comrades that have died. And many have died. Many. Many. Thou canst not think how many. But I love thee as I love what I love most in the world, and I love thee more. I love thee very much, Rabbit, more than I can tell thee. But I say this now to tell thee a little. I have never had a wife, and now I have thee for a wife, and I am happy. I will make thee as good a wife as I can, Maria said. Clearly I am not well trained, but I will try to make up for that. If we live in Madrid, good. If we must live in any other place, good. If we live nowhere, and I can go with thee, better. If we go to thy country, I will learn to talk Inglés like the most Inglés that there is. I will study all their manners, and as they do, so will I do.
Thou wilt be very comic.
Surely, I will make mistakes, but you will tell me, and I will never make them twice, or maybe only twice. Then in thy country, if thou art lonesome for our food, I can cook for thee. And I will go to a school to learn to be a wife, if there is such a school, and study at it.
There are such schools, but thou dost not need that schooling.
Pilar told me that she thought they existed in your country. She had read of them in a periodical. And she told me also that I must learn to speak Inglés, and to speak it well, so thou wouldst never be ashamed of me.
When did she tell you this?
Today, while we were packing. Constantly she talked to me about what I should do to be thy wife.
I guess she was going to Madrid, too, Robert Jordan thought, and said. What else did she say?
She said I must take care of my body, and guard the line of my figure as though I were a bullfighter. She said this was of great importance.
It is, Robert Jordan said, but thou hast not to worry about that for many years.
No. She said those of our race must watch that always, as it can come suddenly. She told me she was once as slender as I, but that in those days women did not take exercise. She told me what exercises I should take, and that I must not eat too much. She told me which things not to eat, but I have forgotten, and must ask her again.
Potatoes, he said.
Yes, she went on. It was potatoes, and things that are fried. Also, when I told her about this of the soreness, she said I must not tell thee, but must support the pain and not let thee know. But I told thee because I do not wish to lie to thee ever, and also I feared that thou might think we did not have the joy in common any longer, and that other, as it was in the high country, had not truly happened.
It was right to tell me.
Truly? For I am ashamed, and I will do anything for thee that thou should wish. Pilar has told me of things one can do for a husband.
There is no need to do anything. What we have together, and we will keep it and guard it. I love thee thus, lying beside thee, and touching thee, and knowing thou art truly there, and when thou art ready again, we will have all.
But hast thou not necessities that I can care for? She explained that to me.
Nay, we will have our necessities together. I have no necessities apart from thee.
That seems much better to me. But understand always that I will do what you wish. But thou must tell me, for I have great ignorance, and much of what she told me I did not understand clearly. For I was ashamed to ask, and she is of such great and varied wisdom.
Rabbit, he said, thou art very wonderful.
Que va, she said, but to try to learn all of that which goes into wifehood in a day, while we are breaking camp and packing for a battle with another battle passing in the country above, is a rare thing, and if I make serious mistakes, thou must tell me, for I love thee. It could be possible for me to remember things incorrectly, and much that she told me was very complicated.
What else did she tell thee?
Why, so many things I cannot remember them. She said, I could tell thee of what was done to me if I ever began to think of it again, because thou art a good man, and already have understood it all. But that it were better never to speak of it, unless it came on me as a black thing as it had been before, and then that telling it to thee might rid me of it.
Does it weigh on thee now?
No. It is as though it had never happened, since we were first together. There is the sorrow for my parents always, but that there will be always. But I would have thee know that which you should know for thy own pride, if I am to be thy wife. Never did I submit to anyone. Always I fought, and always it took two of them or more to do me the harm. One would sit on my head and hold me. I tell thee this for thy pride.
My pride is in thee. Do not tell it.
Nay, I speak of thy own pride, which it is necessary to have in thy wife. And another thing. My father was the mayor of the village, and an honorable man. My mother was an honorable woman, and a good Catholic, and they shot her with my father because of the politics of my father, who was a Republican. I saw both of them shot, and my father said, Viva la República, when they shot him, standing against the wall of the slaughterhouse of our village. My mother, standing against